Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, in the studios of WMOT-FM. Chris Harris, a professor in the Electronic Media Communication Department here at MTSU, is with us again today. And this time we are going to talk about political imagery, how photo ops are arranged by campaigns, and what photographers who cover the campaigns are looking for or perhaps not looking for as they cover political campaigns. Thanks for being back with us today, Chris.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
Well, first of all, let's talk a little bit. I understand you didn't watch much of the conventions, but you know that Barack Obama delivered his big speech at the Democratic National Convention, not in the Pepsi Center in Denver, but in at Invesco Field at Mile High Stadium before 72 to 75,000 people, depending upon who's doing the guessing. The opposition party, the Republicans, have tried to make hay of this and play on their cult of celebrity theme, an empty shell into which people are pouring their hopes and dreams by saying, big speech, big crowd, impressive, makes great TV, and all that stuff, nothing behind it. Does that work? Does that line of rhetoric work, number one? And number two, do you think that the image of a presidential candidate speaking before a huge football stadium-sized crowd is good or bad political theater?
Well, and first of all, you hit it exactly right. It is political theater. They've thought this out very much. And think of what you have the choices of. When you see the, Pepsi Field?
It was Pepsi Center, the
Pepsi
inside
Center.
Arena.
Okay.
And then the stadium was Invesco Field.
Invesco
at
Field. Think of what you're saying when you say Invesco Field, there had to be a wide shot. What does the wide shot show? Thousands of people there. It shows it as being a big event. You don't get that out of the interior image of what goes on at a regular convention, because normally the wide shot isn't going to be anything spectacular. If you actually take a look at it, there's probably not more than 5,000 people on the interior shots, because I don't think that they have that many more delegates there. So what they did by opening it up, the Democrats, by opening it up to the actual park viewpoint, is to already emphasize, oh, this is a big thing. This is larger than life. It's like the Beatles coming to Shea Stadium. Okay, mm-hmm. It's that kind of thing. So you get that kind of intent often in photographs that are planned, these photo ops. I guarantee you that they let in the major photographic representatives, the APs, the Reuters, the Agency France-Presse, all the other mainstream photographers in there to get their positions. And I'm willing to bet that if you analyze maybe the top 20 photographers, you're going to find that 15 of them took the wide position. First of all, everybody already has headshots of Obama.
Right.
Okay. A headshot is a headshot is a headshot. The only slight misstatement of that is, of course, when Jimmy Carter changed how he parted his hair during his term in the White House, and for the first couple of weeks, everybody was just flipping their negatives so that signs would read backwards, etc. But you don't want to miss, as a party operative, whether or not you're the head person in charge of public relations or just a minor person who's involved in it enough to really start to understand how this thing works. What you're looking for is the different image, the one that will strike a chord, the one that, in sports, we see this quite often. 99% of the basketball sports shots are a hairy armpit and a face and maybe just a portion of the ball.
That's because they dunk so much.
That's right. And they do the jump shots and they do all this. Well, what you're looking for is that other angle. That's what Sports Illustrated is especially well known for. They'll shoot a wide angle shot from the floor, showing how the entire sequence occurred, shows where everybody is at the same time, that the same jump shot is being made that everybody else is doing as a stop action.
So that it looks more like Baryshnikov in flight.
Absolutely.
during a ballet performance.
What you need to do, we are so used to seeing our normal images. are images that we would expect to see. So when you see something that's a little bit unusual, either from angle, type of exposure, a classic case is Time magazine for the last three different elections, as I recollect, has always run a series of black and white insider images. Where they had a photographer that was assigned to a candidate, but shot only black and white. Now, in the age of color, we expect color imagery in everything. Mm-hmm. We don't care what it is. I mean, it's got to be full of color, right? Well, when you run a series of black and white images, it immediately catches your attention. It is different than the others.
It also conveys a greater sense of gravitas and gives your subject a greater sense of gravitas than he or she ordinarily would have had.
Absolutely. And what you see with this is, first of all, this was that extended season from hell for the election campaign. My gosh, it has run so long that everybody has seen the normal pictures. Well, normally, we'd be finished with the campaign by now. It would be election time. So we've got another, what is it, 60 days, 40 days?
It's somewhere right. in the 50s as right. we tape.
All we have left now is 50 days approximately where somebody's going to have to come up with an image that is somehow different every day. Otherwise, all you're going to get is those headshots. Who's going to read that? Don't forget, especially in newspapers, but it also occurs in magazines, but especially in newspapers. Well, I would like to think that people buy the newspapers because of the fine quality of photojournalism that goes on. Obviously, that's not the case. And most of the time, the photographs are used to make the reader want to read the copy. If you get a Time magazine that has... let's go back to newspapers because that's even more viable. Newspapers have to break up that gray copy. And so they normally do it with graphics and or photographs. Well, if you've got an exceptional photograph, an exceptional photograph can be as simple as, let's use Barack Obama. He's up on the stage. We normally see him front lit. Well, you can get very different kinds of facial expressions and things like that. But if the photographer works into the right position, he may have a light that would normally be adding lens flare, okay, and destroying an image. But if you put it right in back of your subject, then you've got that rim of light around your subject. Well, now the Republicans refer to Obama as having this Christ-like appearance.
Or a Messiah complex.
Right, a Messiah complex. Well, that image would add to that. Okay, so there's different ways that so it's as subtle as lighting can make the difference and angle can make a difference. One of my first international publications was I did research with recording the effects of the angles that you take head portraits from. And, of course, the one that comes out very consistently as the overwhelming strongest image is from that downward angle. I think it's about 15 degrees to the right. I say downward. It's below looking up. You need to have a heraldic-looking figure of a head. And, by the way, you can trace it back to photographs of Mussolini and of Hitler and of every single powerful entity, Mao, Stalin, all of them. If you take a look at the famous pictures you're going to find are those ones that show him or her basically shot from a lower angle, giving them this sort of leadership image right away built into it.
You and as the viewer of the image, whether it's still photo or video or film, are looking up at this individual.
Right.
So he appears as though he were a statue on a pedestal.
Or a Mount Rushmore
right.
image. I mean, it's that kind of, you're heraldic.
You are literally looking up to
right.
him.
Exactly.
And the idea is get you psychologically looking up to him
right.
as well as physically. Lenny Riefenstahl knew what she was doing.
Oh, absolutely.
You can hate the woman for all she's worth, but she was brilliant.
Well, and she understood. Don't forget, propaganda isn't necessarily a bad word. She was doing the same thing that every political ad huckster does, producer does here in the United States.
She was just doing it for a particularly evil regime.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But she did it masterfully.
Well, she used all those techniques that were available for the photographer to use. What she did, though, is that she was very famous for her broad views, very wide angle to, again, set the thing about, man, this isn't just Joe Blow showing up at a 7-Eleven and he got 20 people there, but rather, whoa, you know, here they are at a big stadium filled with all these people and the flags. She was one of these people. She never had a bald sky. she would use the Nazi flag to fill in a sky. She would use it so that it added an effect to it. Well, not sticking with her for too long, because yes, she does have this horrible baggage of being Hitler's favorite photographer, etc. But we haven't changed from that. Mm-hmm. If you take a look at the image, you know, the New Yorker article that came out with a cover that everybody was so upset with because it showed Obama dressed as though he was a militant and all this
right,
kind of thing.
The caricature of him and Michelle.
Oh, absolutely. And it just raised hackles everywhere, okay? Well, what they forgot was, if you go to the interior of it, there's an opening double-page picture, actually shot by a gentleman I'm hoping to have down here this year, a guy named Mark Pokemper out of Chicago. And it was one of the sweetest, and by that I also mean is the same way we would, college kids would use the term today, sweet, you know? Mm-hmm. It was a very wonderful, straightforward image of Obama in his first campaign when he was running for state senator, and it showed the support. It was one of those images, again, that was shot from a low angle with a wide angle lens. So it showed people, constituents, actually surrounding him and as they were actually involved in talking with him. It was an incredibly strong image. And of course, nobody commented on that. Yeah. You know, it's easier to comment on something that mimics or something that jabs you in the chest a little bit, you know, like a finger pointing, jabbing you in the chest. But when it comes down to the images that we need now, we're either going to get the same old thing, which is these standing pictures of a head and shoulders holding a microphone.
Plenty of American flags in the background.
Oh, not only that, but also if you've noticed on all the TV coverage now, they've seen to it how important it is of those people that are placed in the background. Now, we talked earlier on another show that we've done here about just that whole effect when this was still in the primaries, when we were doing the runoffs and stuff, and we were talking about it. And it was very obvious that Obama had this wonderful campaign staffer somewhere who didn't just hand-pick, but rather showed a real variety of people behind him. And you could see in McCain ads quite often that they were older folk, that they didn't have the young. Well, they've now caught on. Mm-hmm. So now they're using the imagery to support everything that they do. When you've got two campaigners going out there, they want to fill every photograph with as much information as they can. You will start to see, I think, pretty soon, more stories about the personalities. I'm talking about in-depth stories about the families. Now, families have been off limits, basically, because of situations that have occurred. Here we have the Republican vice presidential candidate, Ms. Palin, who has gone through a situation that has happened thousands and thousands of times. Sure enough, her daughter got pregnant, underage, not married, things like this. So I don't know how the Republicans are going to handle graphics that now appear with their images. She's got five kids. Man, what a great, you know, series of pictures you can do about the family. The family. But if they bring up the word family values in any kind of headline tag or something like that, it's going to bring up more controversy.
Well, the Republican spin on the images of Bristol Palin and her pregnancy is that she's choosing to have her baby rather than to have an abortion, and her family is supporting her. Consequently, that constitutes family values.
Well, now, can you imagine what a great spread it would be to show her getting ready? If she's 6 months pregnant now, she's only got 3 months. That's right after the election comes through. So maybe now they would do a story about Bristol going out and taking a look at furniture for the baby's room,
mm-hmm.
things like this. So you can turn it around.
Mm-hmm.
You can say, oh, yes, you know, she's like so many other people. It has been in a family where, yes, she got pregnant out of wedlock. But at the same time, yes, they can easily spin that story. And spin is not a bad word.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other thing that we
Democrats spin, Republicans spin, everybody spins.
And propaganda is propaganda. Propaganda is nothing else than showing just your viewpoint on something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we do that in advertising every single day. My Chevrolet is better than your Ford, you know.
But with regard to Obama, he did have an image problem with regard to the people behind him in at one campaign stop where there was a big flap about there were some Muslim individuals behind him, and his campaign operatives decided to take those people out of the shot because of all of the internet falsehoods about Obama supposedly being a Muslim.
Well, and what do you do in that case?
Yeah,
what do you do in that case? First of all, you would identify it as a Muslim, probably by headdress if it was a female. I don't know that necessarily we would recognize a male Muslim from another person religion-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Can we tell a Catholic from a Baptist in an image?
Well, not unless the gentleman happened to be a member of the Nation of Islam wearing a bow tie and
such. So there's all these different aspects that you can go through. So here we've got Palin, who can actually take what some people would think would be a detrimental aspect of her family for the campaign and turn it around to be a very good positive. But what you're going to have to see is more than a single image representing this. I think that you're going to start to see 2 and 3 and 4 images, little package stories about the family, about how well, you know, look at how it has sparked John McCain.
Mm-hmm.
Having this young woman as his running mate has really perked him up and made him look better. For some reason, it's taken away some of the onus of the age conflict.
Right.
Okay.
Politicians have been using their kids as props in commercials, and you know, since visual images became a big part of campaign paraphernalia and literature, and have been criticized for it in some instances. The Clintons, as we know, famously tried to create this zone of privacy around Chelsea because she was an impressionable, you know, teenage girl and their only child, didn't want her to be hurt. But it's been a long time since we've had really young kids in the White House, Amy Carter being the last one with 3 older brothers, Caroline and John, if you want to go back that far. All the other quote-unquote White House kids have been either young adults or teenagers.
Right.
And now we're on the precipice of having either the Obama kids, who are very young, or Palin's kids, who are very young, in the White House. Now, does this spark the beginning of a new era where people are going to think it's okay to use the kids as props more and more and more?
Well, what you're going to find is that if they are used by campaigns, they're going to defend it heavily. Oh, we're so proud of our family. But you're going to have it's going to be one of those 50-50 things, damned if you do, damned if you don't type things, because those people that will use their family can be criticized for that. Because once you open it up that, yes, you can use my family, or yes, we can use our family as part of our production, you can't slam that door then. You can't say, oh, and by the way, you can't come and talk about my family. If they get to use their family and use that kind of visual imagery that bespeaks of the family outing, I mean, think the images are going to come from the Thanksgiving dinner at the Palin family. It's going to come from her going back to Alaska and showing her in her own environment. So far, I haven't seen very many images that show her in her own environment. You know, right now she could be appearing in Indianapolis or Orlando or anywhere else. I don't have anything that pins her to her Alaska heritage and love. Now, obviously, the husband has great tie-ins because he's won a longer race than the Iditarod. What is it, 4 times?
Snowmobiling, yes.
Yeah, snowmobiling 4 times. He's a rugged individual. He does go out and hunt. He has all those wonderful magical qualities that a male candidate would have been asked to have. Oh, you're a hunter. Yes, okay. You know, all these kinds of things. But she's not the one. She's the candidate, not the husband. So when Newsweek ran, I think it was just this past week, which is the second week, basically, of September, they ran a front page cover image of Sarah Palin. And first of all, it was one of the cheapest looking illustrations I've seen in a long time. It was not where they went out and hired some fancy photographer to do it. But what they tried to illustrate and were very successful at is that she's a supporter of rights of owning guns, et cetera, because the picture is her with a shotgun broken over her shoulder. But it wasn't shot out in the real setting. It was shot against a blue background, okay? So there's that falsity of the image in its own basic qualities. Yes, you're trying to illustrate what somebody thought she should be representing, the yeah. gun lobby, things like that. And it's very successful. As an aside, by the way, it has turned out that I heard something just this past week that, you know, she wears rimless glasses,
mm-hmm.
and the sale of rimless glasses has skyrocketed, okay? You know, so, I mean, these things are constant throughout the visuals that we will see. Now, I'll tell you what I'm hoping for. I would love to see more in-depth coverage of all the families. You know, McCain fell into the, well, it wasn't even really a trap, but when he said he didn't know how many homes he had and stuff like that. So now what we need to see is McCain actually being at one of his homes. We don't get that. We get him on the campaign. We get him doing all this and that. We need to know, how does he relax?
Well, how do you as a photographer get access to something like that without getting yourself in major trouble with the campaign and perhaps being barred from it?
Well, first of all, any campaign that bars you because of the type of pictures you're doing, by the way, you're going to make a fortune over those pictures because something's gone wrong. You need to develop a trust always. It's just like with a journalist. It's not that a journalist that's covering a campaign needs to side with that campaign. After all, a journalist is supposed to be just reporting what is going on without taking viewpoints. Although on television that has certainly changed. That kind of journalism has changed for sure. Same thing with the photographer. They need to be trusted. No photographer worth his salt would allow the campaign to see the images before they're published. But they would need to count on the basic ethics of the photographer. Let me explain this very quickly, if I may. Richard Nixon had a horrible temper. And he was at a convention in New Orleans once. And as they were going into the convention, he turned around and kicked his lead PR guy, his press secretary, in the butt.
Ron Ziegler?
Yes.
Oh, my.
Kicked him in the butt and kicked him out of the door. That was an image. That was an image that, for the first time, captivated this idea that Nixon had this temper and that he would go after somebody who was so recognizable to everybody else, his press secretary. Now we come to this whole idea of control of imagery. A photographer would go to the campaign and say, I've been assigned by Time magazine. We would like to do a series of you at home. We're going to do it in black and white as opposed to color. This is all supposition on my part, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And then the campaign would have a chance to respond. And usually, by the way, the pressure that's used is by the magazine or by the photographer is, you know me and my work. I've been covering you now for several months. If you will give us this kind of exclusivity, you'll probably get a 2 or 3 page spread in Time magazine or Newsweek or U.S. News and World Report or other magazines. This is something that a campaign can't pay for. It is so wonderful for a campaign to get good coverage. I know this. I started covering, I've covered every president's, let's see, I covered Nixon too. So from Nixon, gosh, I'm just up to Bush. I've covered all of them between then. For
W or HW?
W.
W.
That's I did not cover W.
Okay. Was this for the Associated Press?
No, this was I was shooting for Time, Newsweek, and the New York Times.
Okay.
And so it was very interesting. For Newsweek is when I broke in with Jimmy Carter. So I know how these things work. Mm-hmm. If you get the approval, all you need is the approval, the ear of that one guy who walks up to the president or the presidential candidate and says, yeah, we ought to do this. It's great publicity. Can you imagine if Better Homes and Gardens comes on out and says they want to do a spread on Sarah Palin? Well, you're talking about a woman's magazine. Mm-hmm. It's going to have exclusivity. It's got everything you need for it because they will do the pictures at home. They will do the pictures of what this person is actually like. Okay, so you can see the neatness. Now, what's the circulation of Better Homes and Gardens? I don't know, maybe a million, okay? What's 30 seconds on NBC News? 30 million.
Right.
Yeah, okay, but it's that different image that you're looking for, and that's what you'll get out of these other kinds of publications. So the photographer, actually one of the points I'm trying to make here is that it's easy to get a campaigner who's picking his nose,
right,
pulling at his underpants that have formed a wedgie. Okay. You know. And they're so common that no photo editor in their right mind will run them.
But, you know, in the 24-hour news cycle that we have now with cable television and the internet and everything, if that picture in Better Homes and Gardens is compelling enough,
it's going to be
on TV.
It's going to be picked up. It's going to be talked about. So this is where minor publications quite often bring more public information and public response than a major publication will. You're just going to use that major publication, whether it's CNN or Fox News or CBS News. If they pick up that image that came out of Better Homes and Gardens, it's much better to use it that way. There's a back door to get into it. So especially if you might have somebody from, I just shot a story for Guns and Garden magazine, okay?
Yeah.
Using pictures of Walker Percy. Guns and Garden magazine. Well, if Guns and Garden magazine does Sarah Palin at home, what you've got is a base there.
I think you just gave Karl Rove an idea.
There you go. I mean, it's that kind of thing.
Toughness and femininity in the same magazine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the whole thing about it, of course, would be that you could then tie in the next issue with McCain at home. Or you could do McCain and Palin. Here I am talking about the Republicans so much. Now take a look at what the Democrats have to offer. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden has almost kept as a secret for all these years that he's not a multimillionaire candidate at anything.
He's something like the 99th or 100th richest person in the Senate, which means he has a lot of money compared to you and me, but by comparison to his peers, he's poor.
Right, exactly. So it's not going to be quite the same kind of images that you would do of the Democratic side now that you've got Sarah Palin on this Republican side. You can see the new kind of imagery that would come out. Mm-hmm. So what can you do? Well, you can certainly do the fact that Barack Obama, the presidential candidate, has these small kids.
Right.
So that's where you could sort of pick up on that. Or the mystery of Michelle Obama. First of all, very pretty, wonderfully articulate. But we haven't really scratched the surface of who she is.
They tried to take care of that a little bit at the convention, but I think the public still doesn't really know because geeks like me follow this to the nth degree, but not necessarily everyone who's going about their everyday lives. I saw a photo in either Time or Newsweek. It was a candid shot of they're watching TV on the bus, and little Sasha has her head in Barack's lap, and Malia's over here with her mama, and you know that's the kind of thing that it tends to humanize a candidate.
Oh, absolutely, and that's what the images now have to be. Everybody now knows who the four candidates are. Mm-hmm. They can identify them by headshots, but now we have to bring in. Why would we want them to represent us? So that means something about the future. So that means you tie into who the candidates are and what they hold for the future. Obama's got his young kids. Mm-hmm. McCain doesn't have the young kids, but he's got Sarah Palin and her young kids. Mm-hmm. So I think that in this next 50 to 60 days, I suspect that we're going to see more images per layout, that we aren't going to see as many just single pictures. And if we do, I think that they're going to have to be much more than just headshots. I think they're going to have to be what we call scene setters. And that is to establish where this is, what it is. Why are we, why, What makes it so different that we want to read the story that goes with this image? We've heard every single story we've ever wanted to hear on the candidates.
So now the pictures will tell the tale. And think about what you're looking at when you watch the pictures, regardless of what you're watching at. What are the pictures trying to tell you? What are they trying to say?
And also, are they being misused?
Mm-hmm. By the photographer or the campaign?
By the campaign. Photographers, well, we're an unruly kind, okay? Mm-hmm. And yes, we will do all sorts of things.
We're not talking about Hollywood paparazzi here, though.
No. We are talking about professionals who are considered journalists. In other words, they know how to get to the meat of the matter. Don't forget where somebody may have 1,000 words to talk about a war event. Usually it's going to run with one image. And so you have to sum all that up into that one image. You need to make sure that it verifies what's being said in the text.
Yeah.
If it says that two tanks were blown up and in the text it says one tank was blown up, there's an error somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So it needs to give that kind of validity. Well, in campaigns, it's not unusual for campaign managers who are much more on the advertising and PR side than they are on the journalism side that they're going to stretch the point a little bit. McCain added in some of his early imagery, added all sorts of people to the background of an image because he just didn't have enough people there. Well, now you don't have to worry about that. He's going to get enough people wherever he goes. But what else is going to be changed? Are they going to start retouching Sarah Palin? Are they going to make her look? First of all, I don't see anything wrong to begin with, I must add. I mean, it's not like she has a bad skin or a zit the size of a Crystal Burger on the side of her face or whatever. She's a very nice-looking woman. So there's not those kinds of problems. But we're going to see incidental misuse of photographs, some of it intentional. Now, when I say that is intentional, I mean that, yes, things will be doctored to make them look stronger, give a better angle, everything like that. So we also have to learn how to judge the images. And that is, when possible, watch television and also read the newspaper and the magazines, because you'll be able to see the difference. If you're watching, one of the big problems that occurred, not with candidates, but with some images just recently, was images of four missiles being shot from Iran, and instead there was only three missiles. They had added a fourth missile. And I caught it that night because I watched the BBC World Newscast at night, and the BBC had the video images showing the three rockets going up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if covering the same thing and there was only three in their video,
mm-hmm.
why in this still photograph are there four? That's what I'm getting at, is that politics are rough times. I'm not saying that you have to disbelieve every photograph that you're going to see, but watch for them and make sure that they coincide with what the story is about so it validates it. If we see little Sasha, little
Malia
on the lap, that's the image that we want. We don't need to be distrustful of it. We don't need to hear later, oh, well, actually, we inserted her into the photograph.
Or little Trig in Palin's hands.
Right, yes, exactly. What you need to have is reliable imagery that just shows the facts, what these people are really like. Whether or not we will see this, I don't know. It used to be that Life magazine was where we would get these spreads. People magazine started off doing those kinds of spreads. Now they're just celebrity hack type stuff. I don't know where we're going to see it except in the newspapers. Now, when we get to newspapers, we're almost always talking about single images. And what I've been talking about requires more than single images. It really becomes much more of a television-style coverage. Because on television, yes, they'll go to the home. They'll go to a party and you know, be able to document that. And even though you might not get more than a minute 30 on any kind of TV coverage, you're going to have multiple images. So that's what I think is going to be much more television-oriented as to the imagery. When it does come down to print images, I would love to see more in-depth and stop using just a single picture of the candidate at the mic. It tells us nothing.
Mm-hmm.
if you're going to use such stock imagery as that. Well, you wouldn't use it with words. You wouldn't go and send the reporter out and say, oh, well, this is the same stump speech that I've now heard 27 times.
No, you would use the most descriptive words possible without bias.
Right. And that's exactly what we're looking for with the photographs.
And we have exhausted more than 1,000 words on our pictures, so we're going to have to wrap it up, unfortunately. This has been fun. It's always fun with you.
It is a pleasure. I mean, I get a kick out of it, for sure.
Chris Harris, thank you so much. He's a professor in the Department of Electronic Media Communication. You are a full professor, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. I'm one of the only ones with just a master's degree.
Congratulations.
There you go.
I'm Jenna Logue. This is MTSU On the Record. Join us again at the same time next Sunday, please. MTSUnews.com is your one-stop shopping place for all things MTSU, including our podcast. And don't forget, we're also on iTunes.